Welcome to Inclusion Catalyst with your hosts, Mickey Desai and Susan Cooper. We invite diversity leaders to the table to deconstruct complex social justice issues and showcase the best inclusion practices in our workplaces and our communities.
Welcome to the Pivot Point Podcast. This season, I'm focused on sharing ideas and stories from experts on diversity and inclusion. In this episode, I'm going to share some ideas and insights from my guest expert, Simone Morris. Together, we will leave you with some actionable tips to think about and discuss with your organization. We share this information because inclusive leadership is a journey. It requires bravery and courage, and you do not have to do it alone. At Next Pivot Point, I believe we are stronger together. We are one. So we're going to dig in to this week's expert and talk with Ms. Simone Morris, who is really an excellent collaborator and friend of mine. And Simone and I have gotten to know each other over the last several months. It feels like much longer than that, but we have a shared love for diversity and inclusion, especially in those conversations with our children. So we'll get more into that in a moment, but I want to introduce Simone Morris. She is a founder and CEO of her own business, Simone Morris Enterprises, and she's a dynamic speaker who empowers professionals and with inclusion, know-how, and solid behaviors to own their careers. She has passion for inclusion, career ownership, goal setting, and action planning that will inspire you to greater success. And she's done signature talks all over the country with organizations and been featured with Thrive Global, SAP, Glassdoor, and many more. And so welcome, Simone. I'm so happy to have you on.
Thank you so much, Julie. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast.
Well, tell us, how'd you get into this line of work? How does somebody do diversity and inclusion speaking for a living?
I know. You know what? It just like diversity and inclusion is a journey. My career has been a journey that has ended up in the D&I space. I really have a tech background. So most of my time in corporate America was really in the technical space, technical project management work, managing global large-scale projects. And I found my way to the diversity and inclusion space through employee resource group, really. It was an opportunity to get involved and learn more about culture. And so I got involved with the African Heritage Employees Group, and I was a member, a committee lead, a co-chair, a chair, and I just started moving up in the D&I ranks through an ERG, and I loved it. And it got to the point where I ended up loving that work more than my full-time job. And I think because I connected to being able to change culture and impact lives more so, not that I wasn't behind the scenes with the tech space, but I just got the gratification of really being able to create change.
Yeah, it's fun when you can actually see things happen from your input and from your leadership. I think all humans want that in the workplace, and unfortunately, not always are empowered to do such things. And that's why we come in, both of us, you know, speak in organizations and teach them about things like inclusive leadership and how to have a culture that truly welcomes all voices to be seen and people to be heard and feel like they belong. I'm curious, Simone, from your vantage point, speaking with all these different types of organizations and what you see now, and I call it tales from the trenches, you know, what are the stories? You know, could you share some stories or examples of times when you've seen leaders get it right or maybe not so right with diversity and inclusion?
Well, you know, I think this CEO Action Committee, which is a action committee for CEOs who are raising their hand and putting their signature on the dot to say, I am going to ensure that diversity and inclusion is embedded into a way of working in my organizations. And we see so many CEOs that are doing that. So I think that's great, because traditionally you've seen that chief diversity officer who is the person that is really trying to get everybody bought in, whether it's senior leaders or whether it's other employees bought into the D&I business case. So I think from my vantage point, having access to things like Diversity Best Practices, Diversity Inc., the information that's out there, and seeing things like the Action committee and that there are actually CEOs that are signing on the dot and really learning from one another so that this becomes more of a way of doing it. You know, for example, PayPal, they are training their entire staff on being inclusive. And I think it's a significant commitment that is commendable. I think things like Starbucks, where you see them react quickly to cut it at the knees when you have situations that go wrong that could potentially turn into something really huge. And you see that they went ahead and trained, you know, 170,000 people on, you know, how to treat one another with respect and dignity in the workplace. So I think there are companies that get it, that know that, you know, they have the right people who are advising them. And then I think there are some others that struggle to believe that there needs to be so much investment in the D&I conversation, yeah, or pay attention to it, and that it's going to impact their bottom line. If they don't pay attention, it's there anyway.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting, Simone, you know, we compare notes from time to time of challenges we're having with our clients. And that's been a big one for me historically. It's getting better. So to your point about companies seeing the value, seeing the ROI, you know, just like anything that's important in your business, budgeting for something that's important. D&I is not a nice to have, you know, it's a must have. But I, you know, I struggle when my clients say things like, oh, that's, and I literally just got this happening right before our interview today. Oh, that's outside of our budget. And I'm like, you know, I'm curious, you know, how to maximize your investment. Help me understand how you got to that budget number, you know?
Yeah.
It's just this back and forth conversation, and the clients I'm having good experiences with now, it's not about the money. Of course, money's always going to be a factor, right? But it's less about that, and it's more about the value we're creating for their employee experience. And, you know, coming in and providing meaningful content that helps drive behavior and cultural transformation versus, you know, this flash in the pan, one and done, check the box, diversity and inclusion activity. So where are you seeing your clients? Like those that get it, you know, the word that comes to mind, you know, that you shared in your story is being intentional. Like where are you seeing your clients headed? Like where is their mindset? Those that get it about diversity and inclusion, where's their mindset at?
Well, I think the people that get it, they know that they have to continue learning and they have to make space for it. So, you know, like the SHRM space, Society for Human Resource Management, it's a place where I think people kind of get it or understand the opportunity. So that space, I've gotten clients from that space where I'm presenting my message and it's resonating with someone that's sitting in the audience and saying, our company really needs this. And so that begins the conversation. So I think individualistically, there need to be people, there need to be allies, advocates, people who are like, you know what, I see that something is not working or not right. And this needs to come into our organization. And I think that makes it an easier sell to get someone to bring you on the journey with them. I was just having a conversation yesterday with someone and talking about coming in to talk to the senior leadership team and them making time for it. But it's been a journey that I've taken with her, from her seeing me speak twice and then having conversations, having lunch, having time with her manager to talk about what I can do, what is, why this conversation is important. And it's a long journey. Mm-hmm. You know, last year I spoke in Michigan and it took me 18 months to actually get in front of employees to talk about, to have
such
the
patience.
So it's a journey, and the budget thing comes up a ton of times where, you know, I think you have to find the right person that gets it and is willing to put their money where their mouth is. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's at a very high level and you're lucky. that they're able to make it happen quicker. But then sometimes it takes a long time.
It does. It does. Yeah. And it's that diligence and patience from the practitioner side. You know, a lot of times when we're working directly with the human resources group, like you mentioned, or the D&I group, if the organization is large enough to have a diversity and inclusion officer, you know, they're not always the decision maker. You think they are, but often they're having, like to your point about allies, they're having to engage their senior leadership team and allies across the organization to source that investment or to really champion the support so that people will be excited when we have solutions and content to deliver to them. Because it is a continuous journey. And so that long-term commitment, right? And I think that's something for our listeners to take note of. If you're inside an organization and you don't see that long-term commitment on something like diversity and inclusion, you know, how could you ask questions of your leadership team or be, you know, curious and put people in a safe place to really respond and where they're at with it so that you can see, kind of gauge where are we and how can we get better? Because, you know, things like awareness training helps with people that are maybe apathetic or unaware. But as you progress down that, I call it the ally continuum, you know, you start to get more traction on these are the actual behaviors we want to take. These are the things we expect for you as a leader with regards to diversity and inclusion. So it's a journey, you know, and we got to meet
it people. It absolutely like is.
So I'm going to shift gears a little bit because, you know, you and I are really passionate about these conversations with kiddos, and that's how we came together to know and appreciate each other's work is, you know, you have a, Millie's four, right?
Four. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've got a 5-year-old. And so we're in different parts of the country. I'm in the Midwest. Someone's in the Northeast. And, you know, as we were sharing, you know, experiences you're having with your preschool, I'm having with my daughter's elementary school. It's like, this is all too familiar and not that different. The struggles we're having. So we have a new podcast. So plug for that, Inclusion School. You can find everything you need at inclusionschool.com and follow us on Pinterest, Instagram, and Facebook. We're regularly posting episodes and looking always for great guests. But it's for caregivers, educators, and parents that want to talk to their kids about diversity and inclusion and don't know how or how to get that conversation started. So Simone, from your vantage point, what do you see parents, caregivers, educators wrestle with when it comes to something like diversity and inclusion?
With saying the right thing or knowing what to say, kids are so curious and they just, you know, they just spring it. And us as parents, educators, et cetera, how do we respond to what they bring to the table, whether it's asking about why someone is different or, you know, noticing something that you as a parent have noticed and just not said anything about, where your child is going to be like staring or asking you about it, and how do you respond in a way that you're comfortable with if it's something that you're uncomfortable with as well. So I think just, you know, the beauty of the podcast is to realize that we're human and that we're not always going to get it right, but we should not shy away from these conversations, and that there really, Julie, is a ton of resources out there for parents to support on this inclusion journey. And so I think you and I have a wonderful opportunity to shine a light on all these resources that can help with the inclusion conversations.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, at the heart of it, it's like, oh, I don't want to say the wrong thing, not especially to my kid, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want my kid to think I don't know the answer or say something that would label me as a something-ist. Yeah. And being Black History Month this month, I think it, you and I have traded notes on how to kind of thoughtfully help people understand that these are conversations we all need to be having about our history, because Black history, African American history, whatever, you know, language you want to use, is all of our history as Americans. We can't just put that on Black people to educate us about that. And so as a white person, specifically, I know I'm really passionate about, hey, what are we doing to celebrate this at school? And the answer I'm finding is nothing. We're not celebrating it, in fact. And it's kind of a personal challenge for me, because I see this as a missed opportunity. And especially when my daughter has, she has some children of color in her class, but notably not a African American student in her kindergarten class of 24. You know, I see that as a problem. And I get that white people don't feel like it's maybe their place to talk about something like race. But the more we all lean into this conversation and just to your point, we don't have to have all the answers. Like, just be curious. You know, read a book, for example. I'm going to the library to do some detective work later this afternoon. But you told me to do that. And I thought that was a great ally move. It's like, you need to ask your school. You need to get some books and read them to Jane. And we'll, it'll be fun to trade stories on what our kids say about the books, right? Is it really that different? I doubt it is. But I was sharing with you as we got this episode started, like, I'm concerned. I mean, Jane's at that age of 5 where if she doesn't start to see people of color, especially African-American and Black kids, and play with them, like, she may think that they're the other and they're not like her. And that's concerning as a parent. And I feel the need to supply her with information and content so she doesn't go down that road. And it's hard. I think this is so hard as a parent because these are delicate conversations. You're not going to have the answers. You're not going to be prepared. But it's a bit of a dance. And I think I want to know your mindset around this when I read the books, is to not pretend like I have the answers and to really put myself in like the child's mindset of curiosity. You know, as adults, we forget how to be curious. And I just want to be like, this is a gift that a 5-year-old can give me, is just seeing things for what they are instead of all my interpretations, you know, because we have to undo all of our own experiences. So that's what I'm going to try to do. But, you know, what would you think about like the mindset around this? Like, what would you offer to parents that want to go there, but you're just mind, it's hard to even get prepared mentally to get there?
Yeah, just start with one thing. I was sharing about a teacher saying to me to put quotes in my child's lunchbox and that they will share that with the rest of the class. I mean, last month I went and spoke about Dr. Martin Luther King and read a book, and I, you know, Julie and I talk about that on the podcast, how I stumbled around with that because I had a hard time finding a book that I didn't feel 100% comfortable with sharing because it was bringing up words like slavery where, you know, they're
it's heavy for a 4-year-old.
I don't want to be introducing that. I'm not the educator. So just, you know, start with something. And so when I hear you talk about Julie Jane's exposure to children of color, and, you know, not that might not be in her classroom, but there's nothing that says that you as a parent can't bring that into the home. An example of that is, what shows is she watching? So is there Doc McStuffin? Is there Dora the Explorer? Because we have Dora the Explorer, Doc McStuffin. These are different shows that cross over that the children love, that can show them other, you know, expose them to it. If they're not having it in the classroom, it could be magazines, whether it's the Highlights magazine or something.
She's got
like that.
Yep.
In shows, books, there are other opportunities, even as you think about vacation, where you go. So are you more intentional about going to a place that has some of the diversity exposure, the restaurant that you go to, is there going to be an opportunity? Let's say maybe there's a Jamaican restaurant where you are. And so that's going to give them a different exposure opportunity. So just kind of, I think you have to do your research. Yeah. That's what I found when I tried to read. It wasn't that quick for me to just grab a book and run into school. I then was like looking through the book and like, oh man, like, this is not a good one. How about another one? And I partnered with the librarian and we were on the hunt for the best book. And then I thought, you know what? In February, I'm going to do some research of videos that I could show. And I think I'm going to create a poster board and just talk about 4 different people, you know, make it a lot easier to digest because their attention span can go because, you know, you don't want to go that deep, but you just want to introduce some things to them.
Oh, I love all those ideas. So restaurants, that's a great tangible thing. I hadn't thought about it that way. We do go to a Mexican restaurant and a Japanese restaurant quite a bit, but yeah, I think we can do better there. I think your idea about, the shows they watch. And I was a big fan of Doc McStuffins for all the reasons you're suggesting, like a woman doctor of color. She's never going to know that's not possible.
I mean, we binge watch that, like, you know, and we watch it over and over again. So
The phase lasted for maybe, I want to say 8 months. It was less than a year. It was more than 6 months, but I think she flew through that at like 2 to 3. And she did move on to Moana, which I was also very happy about. And we've done quite a bit of Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel, who nicely has, you know, a woman of color in that film alongside her. So I try to be really intentional about it. Like, there's no Barbies a lot in the house, but if there's a superhero action figure that happened to look like a Barbie, it's okay.
You know what? Mattel is doing an excellent job. Mattel now has Barbies that are different colors.
Yeah.
So we're having to be intentional about the Barbie selection.
Yep.
So it's not just one color. They have Barbies that have autism, that are in wheelchair. They are on the move with this diversity and inclusion thing, actually.
Yeah, no, I agree. They're getting better. There's been some really good things that I've been tweeting about that they're doing recently. And they tried to do like a more full figured Barbie that actually could live on for real in those dimensions. I don't think it went over so well. You know, people didn't respond to it. So as parents, you know, if companies are taking steps, like we need to meet them where they're at and like salute that. Because I can tell you, I do a lot of homework on Christmas presents and her birthday's coming up. So giving guidance to other parents, because I know she's going to get some things that I'm not going to love. And, you know, we are having conversations about that right now. It's like, Mom, I know you don't like Barbies, but if they're strong Barbies, it's okay. It's like finding some middle ground, because I don't want her to, like, you know, secretly stash a whole bunch of Barbies under her bed.
That's hilarious. Oh,
but
my
it's
God.
But back to color. I mean, I think really thinking it's so much better than it used to be. And I know as parents, we often whitewash this. It's like, it's so much better than I was a kid in the 80s and 90s. You know, it is better. I will acknowledge that. But it's still hard to find dolls of color. I really try to like steer Jane in the toy aisle towards dolls of color. But she honestly picks things that kind of look like her. And I was thinking about what you said with the shows she watched. She used to watch shows that were more inclusive and like either color wasn't really visible because there were cartoons or, you know, whatever. But now she's watching like YouTube family shows. It's on the kids channel of YouTube. So it's nothing creepy, but they're all white families. And as you were talking, I just thought about that. I'm like, ooh, I got to do better with that. But she's probably looking for families that look optically like ours.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, how do you have that conversation? I don't know. But maybe I'll do some research on it and see if I can plug a different channel that's more diverse.
Yeah. And I think it's okay for her to have her favorite shows that she likes. I think if you just introduce something different in there, like, it's not like you're always going to go to the Mexican restaurant or the Jamaican restaurant, but if you introduce it in there, so it's not, so she's not shocked when she sees
right.
it because she's seen it somewhere else. I think mm-hmm. that's, you know, the key. You don't have to drive yourself crazy as a parent. You just want to make sure that they're getting exposure. And if it's not happening in the school, that you're taking it up on yourself to allow some additional exposure for them, additional things to have conversations about.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think that's a really good point. Don't put too much pressure on yourself, parents, caregivers, educators, you know, diversity practitioners. I feel the compassion fatigue a lot of times set in with us. So we've got to kind of take care of ourselves and know that we can only do so much. And not every experience is going to be diverse and inclusive. So it's a balancing act, though. So I think maybe think about yourself on that continuum. You know, how much are you getting your own exposure to diversity and inclusive environments? Like you said, with restaurants, reading materials, shows you watch, movies, but also what you're exposing, you know, if this is of interest with your children, you know, what you're exposing them to, just being intentional about it. Back to that word you mentioned right from the get-go, intentionality is really how D&I works.
Yeah, and I think even as a practitioner, if you think about it, I mean, for me, as a Black woman, so we start out January, and there's Martin Luther King, and then there's Black History Month, and then there's Women's History Month, and then it's like, ooh, okay, now I get a break. But there's other things going on, and I'm not 100% on, you know, in the beginning of the year, too, there's the Lunar New Year, how adept or how educated am I on all the different diversity dimensions, etc., where I don't have a vested 100% vested interest because that's what I am or something like that. I mean, it's work to stay educated in these different spaces, and we need to be kind to ourselves that we're not going to know everything. And I learn a ton just from being on LinkedIn and seeing people post things where I just don't have the education in that space. I learned something.
Yeah. And being willing to learn from other people. I think that's something that, again, as children, we naturally do. And then as adults, we get into this, like, I got to have all the answers. I got to have all my ducks in a row. And as a parent, that's really problematic for a lot of reasons, but I think it's problematic as a leader. It's just personally and professionally, it can be challenging because you're locked off from learning. We learn most when we're curious and learn from others, especially those that are different than us. Well, Simone, we're at the time where we usually ask our guests. Sadly, the conversation's coming to an end. But if you could share one insight, one big idea, and you and I know it's not this simple, but what question do we get asked from our audiences all the time? Tell me one thing to do, you know, to be inclusive, to be more of an ally. What would you recommend that our listeners do if they could just prioritize one thing?
I would say to be brave. To be brave and to be open to conversations. And what I mean by that is that there's so many things that are happening in the world. And, you know, some of it is scary where you really don't want to go there with the conversation. But part of this journey is being brave to allow conversations to happen. And I challenge organizations to allow conversations to happen. I mean, I clap my hands to companies like Boehringer and Ingelheim, which is a pharmaceutical company, because they brought these actors in to demonstrate challenging conversations and how it might be making your employees feel. Mm-hmm. So if I go to, you know, things that are happening in the Black community that are hush hush, that cannot be mentioned, even though it's like in your face on the TV or whatever, and the conversation is not brought into the organization, I think that's a challenge. You know, whether it's in the gay community and you know, Orlando happened, and you can't just avoid it, whether it's avoiding talking about it on social media, avoiding talking about it in the workplace, because you can't avoid these things and then say, bring your authentic self to work. It just does not work, because I'm filtering based on the pain that I'm feeling, or I can't say this because no one wants to hear it and they don't care. Like, you know, so it's like creating space, being brave to allow conversations, real talk conversations. I love that we had a real talk conversation on our podcast, but allowing real talk to happen, because it's there anyway, whether you talk about it or not. It's like the elephant in the room that's not being mentioned. So I think that's what I would say, that, you know, try to create space to have inclusive conversations and to allow people to mess up and in service of learning.
Yeah, I love that. Brave. I mean, these are brave conversations. I used to say safe conversations, but for a lot of reasons, that's not right. To have a safe conversation about this is impossible because you're holding back. And like you said, you're not acknowledging the elephant in the room, and we're dancing and pretending these peripheral things that really matter to people. You know, you think about, you know, things that happen in the news, things that happen socially.
About women. Look at the conversation that's happening around women. And, you know, we don't need to wait for Women's History Month today. There's a lot of conversation. And I feel like the safe ones are being had, where it's like, okay, we need to have women in leadership or women on boards. Those are the safe one. But there are some big, meaty stuff that's happening where the conversation's just not being had.
Well, I have a client right now that's like, you can come in and talk, but we need to define boundaries up front, and you're not allowed to talk about pay inequality. And I was like, ooh, that just told me a lot.
Exactly. If you feel like you have to say that, then you're filtering what mm-hmm. can be said, and it's speaking volumes already before you even get in there to have these discussions.
I know. It is. And at the same time, though, those are the kind of companies that need our help, right? If that's where they're at, they really need to work on transparency and trust, and we can help them with that. So it's always a catch-22. Do you just work with the ones that already get it, or do you pull the ones that don't get it yet through? So we could debate this for hours, Simone. I enjoyed having you on, and those, I love the bravery, not get it right. Don't worry about getting this whole thing right, and to talk about the real issues, have that real talk, whether that's bringing in, you know, actors or bringing in scenarios. I mean, you can do this real life in a team meeting. You can surface a scenario and unpack it candidly and bravely with your team. You'll build trust, and you'll get more out of your team if you do that. But anyway, we're going to wrap up for today. But before we do that, Simone, how can our listeners follow you? How can they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. They can go to my website, SimoneMorrisEnterprises.org. And I'm also on all the different social media channel. You can just look up Simone Morris and you'll be able to find me.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's Simone Morris, 2 R's, enterprises.org. And be sure to check out Inclusion School, where we're having these real talk conversations regularly. If you're interested in being on the show, check us out at inclusionschool.com. You can subscribe and also ask to be a guest. So we'd love to have you. This conversation resonates with you. So Simone, thank you so much for being on the show. I so appreciate your insight. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Thank you for having me, Julie. I appreciate the opportunity.
Did you know that you can find all 5 seasons of our 50-plus episodes at nextpivotpoint.com? And you can sign up for our complimentary 7-day preview of our new program, Lead Like an Ally, and order our new book, Lead Like an Ally. I appreciate you listening to this episode. Who do you know that needs to hear this message? Hit the share button. Connect with me on LinkedIn. I post daily about this topic. Simply search Julie Kratz, K-R-A-T-Z. I host this podcast because I believe we are stronger together. We are one.
You can bring your stories to the table as a partner and a host on the Inclusion Catalyst podcast. Visit inclusioncatalyst.com and click the link that says join us as a guest host.
And that's it for this episode of Inclusion Catalyst. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues.